This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The latest report on child well-being in Michigan finds a drop in the percentage of children living in poverty in the state between 2012 and 2017, although that number does remain high. There are troubling figures in other areas, such as cases of abuse and neglect. Alicia Guevara-Warren is the Kids Count in Michigan Project Director at the Michigan League for Public Policy. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So as you take a look at all of these different figures and all of the different categories that they're in, how would you say the overall state of child well-being sits in Michigan as we talk today?
So the 2019 Kids Count in Michigan data book, you know, it looked at 16 different measures of child well-being across economic security, health and safety, family and community, and education. And we used 2012 as our base year for comparing how have we actually changed and improved or worsened from that time period. That was a point of time, if we think back in what was happening in 2012, you know, we were emerging from the Great Recession. And this was actually the year most recently where child poverty rates have peaked. So it's a good year for us to kind of look at how have we gotten, you know, better since things were fairly poor for kids in Michigan. And, you know, we've got some mixed things happening here. I think that, you know, we've got some things happening that are good. As you noted, we have fewer children living in poverty, yet that continues to be, you know, one in five kids living in poverty. And when we look at the disparities, younger children are more likely to be living in poverty. Kids of color are more likely to live in poverty. And there's also been an uneven, you know, economic recovery across the state when we look at different geographically looking at different communities and what poverty looks like across the state. So we see, you know, economic security in some ways is getting better, but we also see some really troubling numbers when it comes to both our, you know, education outcomes, but also in, as you noted, the rate of child victims of abuse and neglect.
And that number certainly does stand out because it's up statewide. As I looked at the counties in southwest Michigan, it seemed as though it was up in just about every county in this part of the state, regardless of how that county's doing in other areas. Is there a good explanation for what is going on with abuse and neglect right now?
So this is a number that we've been kind of looking at for a few years now because the rate has been steadily increasing. And as you noted, you know, most counties are actually not seeing an improvement. In fact, when we look at, you know, 82 out of our 83 counties that have data available from 2012 to 2017, only 19 actually improved, with the vast majority of counties experiencing an uptick in the number of kids who are confirmed as victims of abuse and neglect. And when we start looking at, you know, our first question is, what's happening? Why is this happening? You know, there are a couple of different things I think we can point to. One of them is, you know, we know that we have a couple of things happening in the state anecdotally around substance abuse. The opioid epidemic, I'm sure, is a contributing factor to this. It's hard to tell in some of the without the type of data that we need to really, you know, make that relationship. But we've also heard in working with our community partners that things like the affordable housing crisis has impacted the rate of contact with the child welfare system. And then we know that, you know, even though poverty numbers are down from 2012, we know that having a lack of resources can cause, you know, a number of things to happen in a home, whether it's the inability to provide, you know, food. Obviously, shelter is one of those things, but also it creates a stressful environment that can sometimes lead to unsafe homes. So I do want to caution us there in thinking that, you know, just because somebody is, you know, low income, that does not mean that they're more likely to, you know, abuse or neglect their children compared to somebody who's wealthier. However, we know that poverty can, you know, cause a number of situations and circumstances that can lead to unsafe situations for kids. So I don't think that we know exactly what's happening because we don't necessarily have all of that specific data that we need to understand this, but when we we look at it, I think we can point to a few different things that are happening in addition to the fact that we just need better data collection.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because when there's troubling statistics, there's a couple things you look at, and that is, of course, you know, one, are we seeing more incidents of the thing that we don't want, in this case, child abuse and neglect? Is it possible the numbers are better because of changes in reporting or perhaps improvements in finding out that these things are actually happening?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up. That is one, I think, a piece of the story. I don't think that it's the largest contributor or the only contributor, but it definitely is a piece of understanding why the numbers are up. When we look back to what happened in 2012, the state made some policy changes that actually made it easier for people to report any suspected abuse and neglect of both children and adults, and that increased the number of reports that were received, and it increased the number of investigations that were started. So naturally, because you have more investigations, you would expect that the abuse and neglect numbers would go up. But I think that it's, you know, it's hard to tell if that's how much of a contributing factor that is, because the rate of confirmed victims has just continued to rise. And then more recently, we're starting to also see the number of kids who are placed in out-of-home care start to go up, whereas previously we were seeing that number stay pretty steady, and now it's starting to rise. So I think that it's most definitely a piece of it, but I think there are some other things happening as well.
Kalamazoo County had a drop in its infant mortality rate. That's been a long-term problem here. Statewide, the numbers don't look as promising, and there still remains a pretty persistent racial gap. So how big a problem would you say infant mortality is as we look statewide?
I think that we have a pretty big issue to kind of tackle in a number of different ways. You know, as you noted, infant mortality at the state level has stayed about the same, not really getting better or worse. And there are some pretty significant racial and ethnic disparities. You see African-American babies are 2 to 3 times more likely to die before their first birthday. And we're also seeing some troubling trends for the Latinx community, where that rate is beginning to rise, where as other groups are seeing, you know, some improvement. So I think that, you know, when we look at infant mortality in particular, there are a number of things that, you know, contribute to it, like preterm births and low birth weight babies and adequate prenatal care. And when we look at how we're doing as a state, those numbers are also troubling, and they feed into that. The state, you know, much credit to the State Department of Health and Human Services, because they have, you know, really focused in on addressing infant mortality and more recently looking more comprehensively at maternal and infant health and really trying to address racial disparities. So I think that there is a recognition that this is something that we need to address, and we're starting to see that coming out of the state level.
How much, when you look at these numbers, do you go back to that figure on expectant mothers not getting adequate prenatal care? Does that create the ripple effect of increase in infant mortality, increase perhaps in low birth weight babies, et cetera?
Absolutely. You know, being able to go see a doctor regularly, getting that prenatal care early on in a pregnancy can really help to identify any types of potential complications or things to watch out for that could definitely have an impact on having a healthy birth and a healthy pregnancy. So we see all of those things kind of feeding into it, in addition to things like unintended pregnancies. All of those are, you know, interconnected and, you know, can result in a positive or negative impact on infant mortalities.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. The Kids Count data book examines the state of child well-being in Michigan in a variety of areas. Alicia Guevara-Warren is Kids Count in Michigan Project Director at the Michigan League for Public Policy. The numbers on education show that there's been a drop in the number of students who don't graduate on time. So that's a positive development, but also fewer young children enrolled in preschool. Not as many are proficient in reading or college ready. So what would you say is the overall picture of children as it relates to education in Michigan?
I think that these numbers really show us what we already know, that we're not doing well as a state to support our kids to reach their educational, you know, potential here. There's been a lot of focus and effort into expanding and supporting preschool. I think that we need to think about a couple of different things. First of all, the data that we're looking at is 3 and 4 year olds who are not in preschool. Now, the state has a 4 year old public preschool program, but we do not have a 3 year old program. So, something to kind of consider as we look at the fact that, you know, over 50% of 3 and 4 year olds are not in preschool. It could potentially be an access issue. The other thing is, you know, education really begins at birth. It begins with a healthy mom and a healthy birth. And those first 0 to 3 years are extremely important, ensuring that we're connecting families with all the right types of programs that they might need. One of these programs being early on, which helps to really identify developmental disabilities and intervene early prior to preschool. So understanding that, you know, educational outcomes really starts well before preschool. And again, you know, building that strong foundation then builds into the experiences in preschool and in the K-12 system. So I think we need to really think about how we can address education on a continuum, but also thinking about how, you know, our abuse and neglect numbers and poverty numbers and how all of those feed into educational outcomes, because kids, you know, they come to school carrying a number of things with them, and you see a movement in our schools and our education system to use trauma-informed practices. So I think, you know, all of those things are helpful, and I think we are starting to move in the right direction, but we've got a lot of work to do here.
We mentioned that number on poverty at the start, children living in poverty, is improving, but you also noted that there are some differences racially, also geography. Are there certain areas of the state where we are seeing that number is getting better? In other words, maybe the economic recovery is better in some areas of the state?
Absolutely. You know, you can see that the poverty rates in some of our, you know, top-ranked counties this year have, you know, some of the lowest poverty rates, whereas a county like Lake County, for instance, while, you know, they did see some major improvement, they continue to have, you know, a fairly high number of kids living in poverty. I will say that, you know, out of all of the counties that we looked at, 82 out of the 83, all but 3 counties experienced an improvement in poverty rates for kids. So it's a good sign. It's just that when we look at, you know, that sheer number alone, Lake County has, you know, more than 30% of their kids living in poverty, whereas, you know, a place like Oakland County has, I think, roughly 8% of kids living in poverty. So major disparities geographically, and of course, as you noted earlier, by race and ethnicity.
So what are specific policy changes or priority changes, I suppose, could be another way of looking at it, that the League for Public Policy would recommend to show improvements in any or all of these areas?
So one of the things that we know as we, you know, kind of along the lines of addressing poverty and economic security, we can strengthen policies that support work. The state has an earned income tax credit that allows, you know, working families to keep more of what they earn. We know that kids who live in households receiving the EITC experience improved educational and health outcomes. We also know that there are ways that we can modernize our EITC to allow our younger workers. You know, Michigan has, you know, about 10% of 18 to 24-year-olds who become young parents. So we have, you know, younger workers. We also have what we call childless adults, who are often non-custodial parents who don't have a child living in their home. Both, you know, young workers and childless adults are not able to receive the state EITC, so we can modernize it by expanding it to these two groups. We also know how important, you know, access to affordable, high-quality childcare is to both work opportunities but also early learning experiences for our kids. So really raising our eligibility level so that more families can access the program is important. And then the last thing I'll mention is, you know, our home visiting system here in the state. Our home visitors do some tremendous work across the state. developing relationships with families and helping to identify barriers and challenges. And they've shown, you know, their evidence-based programs that have shown to improve outcomes in economic security, school readiness, and in preventing child abuse and neglect. So it's one of those programs that really takes a comprehensive approach to helping families, and it takes a two-generation strategy as well, because it's helping both the family and the children at the same time. We can definitely expand that program and strengthen it by developing a centralized intake system, which would help to ensure that families are being matched with the right program. So I think there are a number of things that we can definitely do to improve these outcomes for kids and families, and those are just a few of them.
The Michigan League for Public Policy has also been urging the state to raise the age, and basically that's the age at which someone is automatically charged as an adult if they're accused of a crime. That does seem to be getting some headway in the legislature. Is criminal justice an area where perhaps there is a little more movement going on some of these issues than some of the other things that you mentioned?
Yes. So there is so much bipartisan support in criminal justice reform that we're really grateful to see. Raising the age of juvenile jurisdiction is a top priority for how we can improve opportunities for young people, specifically what happens with 17-year-olds who are charged as adults. You know, they carry that adult criminal record with them into adulthood, which can present barriers to employment and housing and education. And so if we can, you know, treat our 17-year-old kids as the young people that they are and connect them with the age-appropriate types of programs and services, we can most definitely improve their long-term well-being and long-term economic security as well. So we are really excited to see that the legislature has prioritized this and is moving it forward.
And is that also maybe going back to the idea of the two-generation strategy that helps a young person, but it also may help that young person down the road when they're an adult, and therefore is beneficial to any children that they may have sometime in the future?
Absolutely. It's really taking that long-term kind of viewpoint and, you know, how we can help. If we help our young people, we know that they are the future, you know, parents and workforce and all of those things. So investing while they're young and making these changes to really increase opportunity, I think, is extremely important.
Alicia Guevara-Warren is Kids Count in Michigan Project Director at the Michigan League for Public Policy. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Links to this year's Kids Count report can be found at WMUK.org. You can subscribe to WMUK's West Southwest podcast through Apple iTunes and by searching podcasts in Google Music. It's also available through our website, WMUK.org, and the WMUK app. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.